Hello and welcome into the KE Report. I'm your host, Shad Markowitz, and I'm talking today with Justin Hune, founder and publisher of Uranium Insider. Justin has Uranium Insider, the website, and also puts out a great YouTube video about every day or so. So definitely check out his channel on YouTube as well. We'll put a link down below to the Uranium Insider site. Justin, when we're talking about uranium and we're talking about what's happening this week, it'd be crazy not to mention that the base shelf prospectus has been amended at the Sprott Physical Uranium Trust, and it's been increased. Their financing limit has gone from $1.3 billion up to $3.5 billion. So that's a pretty big move. What do you take away from that announcement this week?
It's, you know, the timing was perfect because we continue to have these pullbacks in the bull market, right, as you always will. And what often happens is you see these cyclical downturns on decreasing volume that come back to the 50-day. Some of the stocks maybe approach the 200-day, and sentiment gets washed out a little bit. Some of the late money that's kind of tourists in the sector gets shaken out. And then you just have some massive piece of positive news come in and smack the market in the face, and it just reverses course, which is precisely what's happening today. Sprott, since they launched their ATM on the 17th of August, they've raised almost $1 billion. And their initial ATM was $300 million. They upped it by $1 billion to 1.3. Now that base shelf prospectus is $3.5 billion. They added another, I believe it's $1.2 billion, to the ATM. We expected them to be re-upping this ATM again soon because they've got almost $1 billion out of that initial 1.3. However, we weren't sure how much it would be and how quickly it would happen. So Sprott is just really coming into the sector in a big way here.
Well, Justin, for those that are not familiar with how this ATM, this at-the-market financing works within this Sprott Physical Uranium Trust, you know, it's geared around buying the physical, but just talk to us about how that works, where it has to trade at a premium to its net asset value. There's a couple other things that play into this, and how this has been an important mover in the uranium sector, along with other supporting funds like the Yellowcake Fund.
Sure, yeah. So the ATM is at-the-market financing, which essentially allows them to issue shares into the open market at will. They are stating that they are not doing so unless they are greater than a 1% premium to their net asset value. So essentially, their net asset value is the value of the uranium that they're holding at the current spot price, plus the cash on hand. And they take a ratio of that relative to their number of outstanding units and the price of the unit. So if the unit is getting some buying pressure in the market and it pushes that up to greater than a 1% premium to their net asset value, and they take a 1% fee when they purchase uranium, so that's why they have to be greater than 1% and not be dilutive. They'll go ahead and issue shares into the open market at up to 50 to 60% of the daily trading volume. So if you see these big volume days in the Sprott Physical Uranium Trust, and you know that they're greater than a 1% premium to NAV, you know they're heavy in the market raising cash. They've had multiple days in the $30, $40, $50 million range in a single day. They actually had one day where they raised $90 million, so that they've been able to raise a lot of fresh capital that's come into the space. And the great thing about the trust is the physical uranium that they're purchasing is not coming back into the market. They're essentially an end user. So the fact that they purchased almost 22 million pounds in just over 3 months is huge. At this rate, they're going to be purchasing far more than the annual demand of the United States nuclear fleet. Yellowcake is a similar but a little bit different fund. They're also acting as an end user. They're not planning to sell pounds into the market. They have an allocation of $100 million of uranium they could purchase each year from Kazatomprom. This year they raised an additional, I believe it was $150 million, and bought some more pounds from Kazatomprom and one other entity. So it's just yet another physical fund. And then adding to that is the announcement last month of the ANU Physical Trust that will be set up, not set up by Kazatomprom, but initially seed funded partially by Kazatomprom, partially by the National Bank of Kazakhstan. This will be a fund that will be set up in Kazakhstan and will be on one of the Eastern stock markets. So this will be a fund that will be accessible to investors in the East, and we believe there will be great demand for it. There's a lot of money, obviously, invested in oil and gas as an energy play in the East, and we think that their appetite for some diversification within the energy space will be huge.
Yeah, so it's not just one fund. It's now three funds that are buying out of the physical markets, typically affecting the spot pricing. And we've seen the big effect that this has had, where the spot price has jumped up in over a year and a half from $30 up to the high 40s. It even hit as high as 50 earlier this year. So it's definitely having an effect. And the other question would be, how is this playing into the utility companies and their ability to come on the market and buy physical uranium. So for a long time, we had all this secondary supply, the Russia underfeeding, we had the Department of Energy from the United States that were dumping some on. But even up until last year or so, there was speculation that Japan was taking some of their secondary supply and putting it. That's mostly dried up. And now the spot market has mostly dried up with all these physical buyers. So, you know, you had covered something on your show, Justin, about the carry trade and how that's important and how that plays into the physical fuel buying cycle. I thought you may just take a minute here and unpack that for our audience so they could better understand that a lot of times Sprott is also now the ones buying up this uranium from the carry trader. So how does this all fit together in the physical market supply?
Yeah, it's kind of a complex web. I'll do my best to try to unpack that. So utilities are essentially not participating in the spot market currently, for the most part. It seems like they're kind of attempting to sit this out and see if it's going to, if it's just going to pass. We don't believe it will, obviously. So a lot of the spot market action currently is coming from the physical trust, coming from Sprott primarily. There's obviously some trader action happening as well. And your point to the Japanese, you know, they purchased a lot of uranium prior to Fukushima at much, much higher prices. So there's a lot of inventory locked up sitting on the books of utilities in Japan that are very high priced that they don't want to take a loss on their books. And some of that uranium, as we get the higher pricing, will probably come into the market, which is one reason why I think that we actually could see a longer, more sustained bull market now, as opposed to a speculative price spike. And I know I keep going back and forth on this, but you know, the news keeps changing. So the carry trade is essentially this mechanism that has done much to clear out a lot of the mobile inventory that came from excess supply from the previous decade. It's been a very, very popular way for the utilities in the nuclear industry to access uranium relatively inexpensively with relatively low risk, high dependability, and not take on long-term contracts at higher prices that the producers need. So essentially what it is, traders will sign a contract with the utility, and this will be promising delivery of uranium out a few years, let's say. You know, carry trades are typically in 2, 3, 4 year time frame. They don't really go beyond that, and anything less than a year is technically a spot market trade. And so what the traders would do is they would purchase those pounds in the spot market and carry them for delivery out into the future. They would add the cost of capital, interest rates, they would add their own profit margin. And for the utilities, it was a really easy way to access pounds. Rather than putting out an RFP and going into the spot market or signing a long-term contract at a much higher price, especially if you look back, you know, a year and a half, 2+ years ago, when you had the spot market trading in the mid-20s, let's say, and you had Cameco signaling to the market that they need contracts signed in the mid-40s. Well, the utilities are not about to just volunteer up and pay that huge premium to the current price when they can get a carry trade for, you know, 10, 15% higher than the spot market for delivery 2 to 3 years out. That's highly, highly dependable and has been for the last, you know, 5+ years. What's happening currently is we believe that the carry trade is declining substantially, and that has mostly to do with the volatility that's happening in the price. It's difficult for them to take a certain premium on a carry trade and promise that out into the future, especially if there's not a lot of liquidity presently in the spot market, which we believe there is not. With that said, there's a lot of pounds still carried by traders from previously signed carry trade agreements. And what we've had on occasion over the past 3 months with the advent of Sprott is some pretty substantial backwardation in the uranium market. And what that is essentially is the present price of uranium is trading at a higher price than the forward curve, than the futures. And so if a carry trader is carrying pounds that are committed for delivery a few years out, and they can take those pounds, sell them into the spot market at the present price. So, you know, at one point we had, you know, $50 spot uranium and $40 term uranium. So they could sell that into the spot market and sign a long-term contract from a producer at a fixed price. So what they've been doing is just scalping, you know, another $3, $4, $5+ when we have that backwardation and selling those pounds directly to Sprott. So what that essentially has meant is there's been some more pounds being sold to Sprott that are not effectively going through the spot market. So you'll see these days Sprott bought 700,000 pounds and the spot market didn't move. Well, that's because they're taking those pounds essentially from the future, buying those from carry traders And what that's done is obviously add some liquidity for Sprott, but it also is these pounds that would have been available for utilities, let's say 2, 3, 4 years out that are being held by carry traders, those pounds are no longer going to be available to utilities because they're going to be held up with Sprott. So that's kind of a long-winded way of saying that some liquidity is coming to Sprott off market, but it's being traded from the future. And so when that moment arises where the utilities are going to continue to need to source uranium out in that 2024, 2025, 2026 and beyond timeframe, there's going to be less available to them. And this is one of those reasons why. One more piece of liquidity that's coming to Sprott is that we did have some other hedge funds purchasing physical uranium over the past few years. I don't believe it's been huge volumes, you know, maybe to the tune of 5 to 10 million pounds total would be my slightly educated guess on that realm. And some of those funds, we believe, are selling those pounds in block trades to Sprott in exchange for trust units. Why would they hold physical uranium on their books when they can hold a highly, highly liquid, you know, trust, a stock, essentially, that they can have the exact same exposure to the commodity upside without taking on the additional risk of holding physical pounds? They can just hold the trust units.
Yes, that is exactly why the Sprott Physical Uranium Trust being able to raise its financing limit to $3.5 billion is just that more significant, because it's not just retail investors, it's not just institutions, it's some of these hedge funds and carry traders that can also sell to the Sprott. Do you think that the contracting cycle is finally going to arrive soon, where the utility companies come to the table with the uranium producers or developers that are near-term producers and start the contracting cycle that's been missing from the sector for over a decade?
Yeah, that's really the million-dollar question, right? I mean, first of all, I want to credit Art Hyde from Segra Capital for that reverse carry trade concept. I think that he really, really nailed it. And obviously, that's not happening super prevalently. It's only when there's significant backwardation in the market, so which is, you know, only happens at certain points when the spot price is running hard before the term price catches up with it. So if anybody's interested, he wrote an amazing blog post a few days ago that's on their website, Segra Capital. As far as the contracting cycle goes, you know, the utilities in the U.S. and abroad are more covered in the near term than the investment community would like to accept. And so is the contracting cycle starting to pick up? Yes, it is. We're hearing from multiple producers that they're getting attention from utilities that are coming to them, seeking out pounds beyond 2025. And so in the near term, utilities are pretty covered, which is why they're able to sit out of the spot market currently and sort of hope that this passes. What is going to happen, in my opinion, is the physical trusts are going to continue to consume pounds as we plug along in this market. And if the Sprott Physical Uranium Trust purchases 50, 60, 70 million pounds over a 12-month timeframe, that is going to have massive effects on the mid and long-term markets via the term market price moving up with the spot price is one reason, via the utilities paying a higher delivery price on their existing contracts due to the reference to the spot price and to the concepts I'm just mentioning with regards to funds selling their holdings to Sprott with regards to this reverse carry trade concept. Every single pound that is being purchased by Sprott is a pound that will not get into the hands of a utility. So as we continue to scrape away at not only the spot market and the production that comes into the spot market on a consistent basis, but any excess pounds that are being shaken free due to this new price-insensitive buyer with huge volume demand. So yes, we're seeing an uptick in interest for term contracts out into the later part of the decade. And, you know, that sounds like, oh, that's a long time away, Justin. What does that even matter? Well, the market moves extremely slowly, and 5 years away in the nuclear fuel market is essentially tomorrow. It takes 2 years to come out of the ground before uranium turns into a fuel rod. And so the fact that the market moves slowly, the fact that it's going to take multiple years for even the care and maintenance mines to come online, the fact that Kazatomprom is reaffirming their supply discipline in terms of their production, that they're seeing supply chain issues and they're not going to be exceeding their current rate of production for the next, you know, 2 to 3 years at the minimum. This is setting up for what I believe, like I mentioned in our last talk, Chad, is our uranium supercycle is what I think is happening here. And the term contract market is really kind of the bread and butter for a uranium bull market. And the financial players are really accelerating the pace at which this is going to happen. And so are the utilities in a panic? Do they need to come to the market right now? No, they don't. They have healthy inventories. But what's happening is the future potential for a serious supply shock based on the current market dynamics, including the massive build-out that's happening in China, definitely has the utility's attention. And it's only a matter of time, in my opinion, before they get concerned about that later part of the decade timeframe and start to restock inventories or bolster their inventories. And the uncovered utilities are definitely going to be coming to the market.
Yeah, and you mentioned those reactor builds in China with 150 planned and proposed. That's a pretty aggressive part of their energy component. And that's just going to be future demand that's eventually going to have the Chinese. Some people have worried that they have stockpiled too much, but they're probably going to become net buyers again to plan for that giant demand increase they're going to have coming down the road with all those reactors. So one other thing we should point out about the Sprott Physical Uranium Trust before we move on is that inside of the ETF URNM, which is mostly uranium miners, it's got a significant weighting to the Sprott Physical Uranium Trust as well. So people that are buying that as an investment vehicle for the miners are probably knowingly and unknowingly ending up buying physical uranium for the Sprott Physical Uranium Trust. So talk to us about that flywheel concept you've been discussing and how it kind of feeds itself, so to speak.
Sure, yeah, that's 100% correct. The Sprott Physical Uranium Trust has, gosh, I believe it's a 7 or 8% holding within the URNM ETF, which, by the way, will be taken over by Sprott in Q1 of next year. It will become the Sprott Uranium Miners ETF. And it will be yet another product in their suite of products in the uranium space that they're building out at this point, the Sprott Physical Uranium Trust, along with the ETF, that they can sell and market to their massive database of customers. They really are taking the reins here. And so anytime funds are flowing into that ETF, what happens essentially is the ETFs, they issue shares and they buy their underlying holdings. They add to their underlying holdings by buying the stock on the open market. And so money going into URNM to a small extent also goes into the Sprott Physical Uranium Trust, which does directly lead to physical purchasing when they're at a premium to NAV. So it's one of those things, you know, this the flywheel effect is something we've been writing about for a couple of years now, which primarily has to do with ETF flows and the ETFs being mandated to purchase their underlying holdings as the funds flow into these ETFs. But this is kind of like a flywheel squared with the money coming into the ETFs, not only moving the equities, but also going into the trust, and trust buying physical, the physical price moving, the movement of the physical price in the spot market, increasing positive sentiment in the sector, increasing volumes into all the equities and the ETFs. And it just is kind of this flywheel that gains momentum with the funds flowing into these trusts and into the ETFs. So it's a pretty profound situation. When the money does come in hard into the sector, you can really see the equities move and the physical price of uranium at the same time.
Yeah, it's an interesting process that's kind of feeding itself. The more that people get excited about uranium miners and buy URNM, the more physical uranium they're buying through the Sprott Physical Uranium Trust, then the prices go higher and it feeds itself. It's an interesting dynamic that we haven't seen in the marketplace to this level at any point that I can remember in the last decade or so. And just one more question while we're talking about the uranium miners. They had quite a run, really over the last year and a half, 2 years, but especially this year and the last few months. Some big moves. There's been a correction lately. Some people have wondered, is that it? Is it over? But at the same time, we've seen encouraging signs like the number of M&A deals has really picked up. And so we've saw just recently Deep Yellow make an offer to buy Vimy. We've seen Encore in the process of taking over Azarga Uranium. And we just saw UEC pick up all of Uranium One's U.S.-based assets. So we've seen a couple M&A deals just in the last, let's say, 2 months or so. Do you see that as a positive sign for the sector? And do you think we'll see more of that?
I generally see M&A in any sector really as kind of a confirmation or an affirmation of a bull market. It's the companies recognizing that they believe that the upside for the years to come is great enough that they will take on the risk and spend the cash and shares to commit to increasing the size of their company. And by taking out assets or the companies that they see have a blue sky potential, essentially. So yeah, it's definitely a positive. And the uranium sector is so small, I really don't know how much we're going to see of it. But I will say, I feel very confident we will be seeing more of it. We're likely going to see new entrants into the space. And honestly, I'm surprised we haven't seen more. We're still at only, I think, 65 publicly traded companies at the present moment. So I'm surprised that we're not already at 75, 80 companies. And we should see some more companies come out of the woodwork in the next year or two. But yeah, I do expect to see more M&A. It's definitely a positive sign, And there's been some really good moves. Deep Yellow, folks have been expecting John Borshoff to go after another company or another asset for a couple of years now. So it's nice to see them finally taking some action. And then the Zargon Encore deal was a great deal. That's a really fantastic asset. They have two good assets, actually, the Gas Hills mine in Wyoming and the Dewey Burdock mine in South Dakota. And then obviously UEC had the balance sheet and the market cap to grab those Uranium One assets, which are fantastic assets as well. So it's good to see a confirmation by these companies that, yeah, this is actually for real. And we're taking steps to further our companies for the coming bull market.
Well, it's an exciting time in the uranium sector, and it's been one of the standout commodities, whether you're looking at just mining stocks or just the energy metal space. Uranium and the uranium stocks have had a really bang-up year. It'll be interesting to keep following along to see how things develop into 2022. But Justin, we always appreciate you coming on and updating our audience on what you're seeing out there in the marketplace and the news that you're following. And we just appreciate you coming on the KER to share your thoughts with us.
It's my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me again, Chad. Nice talking with you as always.